This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Edinburgh Napier's Radio Energy. My name is David Paul. Coming up on today's show, today is the day that MSPs vote on IndyRef 2 in the Scottish Parliament. The ballot is expected to pass, but the Prime Minister is insisting that now is not the time to start the process.
We should put our energies into making sure we get the right deal for Scotland and the whole of the UK. Right now, we should be working together, not pulling apart.
Article 50 is set to be triggered by Theresa May tomorrow, but will the government be able to sort out a deal in the next 2 years? And lastly, the latest Edinburgh People survey shows that Morningside is the happiest place in Edinburgh. We find out why. That's all here in the next 30 minutes. But first, here is today's news bulletin with Brooke Mills.
Thank you, David. The debate over a potential second independence referendum for Scotland continues at Holyrood today. The debate was scheduled to take place last week, but was postponed following the Westminster attacks. Nicola Sturgeon has suggested that the vote be held in early 2019.
Is the reasonable timescale for people in Scotland to have the chance to make an informed decision? Do they want to follow the UK down the Brexit path or choose to be an independent country? Ultimately, that's not something I should decide or something Theresa May should decide. It's something the Scottish people should decide.
According to the Brexit Secretary, David Davis, if Northern Ireland votes for unification, they can rejoin the European Union. Unlike Scotland, who would have to join a queue for membership if they become independent, a united Ireland would not need to reapply for membership. Davis wrote to a Northern Irish Social Democratic and Labour Party MP stating that if Ireland wanted to unify and stay in the UK government would honour its commitment to allow this to happen. The EU is yet to comment on the matter. The Daily Mail is facing accusations of moronic sexism after focusing on Nicola Sturgeon and Theresa May's legs, as opposed to the politics at hand. When the two leaders met up in Glasgow to discuss Brexit, the Daily Mail ran the headline, "Who Won Legsit?" with a photo of the women's legs. Former Women and Equalities Minister Nicky Morgan says articles like that may deter young women from entering politics.
People off adopting the high-profile careers, and I think that the reaction from social media and from commentary this morning that I'm picking up is that they find it. People find it deeply disappointing. I don't think it does any of us a service.
Waiting time targets for cancer treatments in Scotland have been missed for a fourth consecutive year. The most recent figures show that over 87% of patients started the treatment within 62 days. However, the government target is 95%. Only 5 out of 14 health boards met that figure. The Scottish Government said it was clear that more must be done to ensure target times are met. Macmillan Cancer Support agreed and described the figures as unacceptable. A Royal Marine who was jailed after killing an injured Taliban fighter in Afghanistan has been handed a 7-year sentence for manslaughter. But because Alexander Blackman has already served half of that, originally having been convicted of murder, his lawyer says he will be freed within weeks. His wife asked reporters to respect their privacy.
Please can I ask that you now allow the two of us some time together to readjust. We fully recognise that you will want to speak to us, and especially to Al, and we will arrange for that soon enough. But in the meantime, may I ask that you give us some space? Thank you very much.
Today, President Trump will sign an executive order addressing climate change. The order being signed today will denounce at least 6 executive orders put in place by former President Barack Obama that aim to regulate carbon emissions and better the environment. Trump has previously spoken out against climate change, calling it a hoax. A White House official said protecting American jobs is more important than regulating climate change. Rory McWhirter, an Edinburgh businessman, has been jailed for 28 months for registering the births of 26 non-existent babies. McWhirter used the birth certificates to claim just under £35,000 in fraudulent benefits. Sheriff Alistair Carmichael said that there is no alternative to a prison sentence for his crime. A new 12-sided £1 comes into circulation today. There have been security concerns about the old round pound, with up to one in every 30 in recent years having been a counterfeit. The Commercial Secretary to the Treasury, Baroness Neville Rove, says it has been a painstaking process.
3 years ago we decided to do this, and we've been working right across business to minimise the costs for them. And of course they get the advantage of no longer having any counterfeits. And I think it is the way ahead.
Scottish Energy Minister Paul Wheelhouse has officially launched a wind farm to fund the building of new homes. The group of 3 turbines in East Lothian is said to be the first of its kind in the UK. although the project was initially rejected by the Scottish Borders Council Planning Authority due to worries that it would impact the landscape, permission was granted in 2012. It is hoped that revenue of £20 million will go towards the building of 500 new affordable homes by the Berkshire Housing Association. Cyclone Debbie has torn through the Queensland area of Australia, leaving many injured and thousands of homes without power. The gusts of wind exceeding 160 miles an hour is the worst weather to hit the region since 2011. Mark Roche from Queensland Fire and Emergency Services has urged residents to stay safe.
This is a very destructive storm and storm system, and I think the public and the community of Queensland need to understand that we are going to get lots of reports of damage, and sadly, I think that we will also receive more reports of injuries, if not death, and we need to be prepared for that.
This is Radio Energy News.
Thank you, Brooke. The Scottish Parliament is voting today on whether it will support First Minister Nicola Sturgeon's plan to present a fresh independence ballot to the UK Parliament. The debate over the matter was scheduled for last Wednesday, but was halted following the Westminster terrorist attacks. The vote is expected to go through, despite the UK Parliament's insistence that no independence referendum will take place before Brexit. Bryce Arthur has the story.
The question is not whether the Scottish National Party will win today's vote, but rather what they will gain by winning. Holyrood's 63 SNP MSPs are all expected to support their leader, Nicola Sturgeon, in a push for independence. The Parliament's 6 Green Party MSPs are also predicted to side with Sturgeon, giving the SNP a comfortable pro-independence majority. A statement from the Green Party said that they welcomed the announcement that a Section 30 order is being sought on an independence referendum. The party also stated that they would be campaigning for a progressive, internationalist and independent Scotland. However, the Scottish Government's stance might end up carrying very little weight. The vote is not a straightforward request for independence, but rather a request that the ability to call an independence referendum be given to the Scottish Government. Section 30 of the 1998 Scotland Act, which formed the devolved Parliament we have today, controls what powers Westminster can give to Holyrood. The vote today will decide whether Nicola Sturgeon is allowed to request from Westminster the power to call an independence referendum. Even if that power is given, the referendum could only be called if a significant portion of the Scottish population would support independence. We asked Nicola McEwan, Edinburgh University's Professor of Territorial Politics, to explain Theresa May's stance on Brexit. The Prime Minister says that now is not the time for a referendum, but what exactly does that mean?
What the UK government has been saying is a bit more ambiguous than that. So they seem to be suggesting, although the Prime Minister herself has never said this, others who are speaking presumably with her authority have been saying, implying that it wouldn't be sufficient to know what the terms of Brexit would be. You would have to first see how it was implemented and what kind of country the UK became after Brexit, which could be, you know, a decade after Brexit. So that sounds to me more like a no rather than a now is not the time.
The UK government is discouraging the idea that there will be another independence referendum. But the other question, hovering above the heads of Scottish voters, is if there should be one at all. Professor McEwan explained to us whether the situation within the United Kingdom has changed significantly enough since 2014 for another referendum to make sense.
Brexit has created a material change of circumstances that justifies revisiting the question again. And I think there's a strong case to be made that Brexit, whatever it turns out to mean, could have quite a profound effect on the nature of the United Kingdom state. So I think there's a legitimate claim to be made that the decision that was taken in 2014 was about giving consent to a different kind of United Kingdom. And so I think the case to revisit it is not without merit, in my view.
As it stands, nothing is decided for either the potential second independence referendum or for the Brexit agreement. But with this evening's vote, which will be finalised at 5 p.m, and Theresa May's declaration of Article 50 tomorrow, the future of both Scotland and the United Kingdom should become much clearer.
Tomorrow, the government will start the formal proceedings for leaving the EU. Prime Minister Theresa May is set to trigger Article 50, firing the starting gun on 2 years of tough negotiations. Sir Tim Barrow, the UK's permanent representative in Brussels, is to personally hand over the letter from the British government to the European Council President, Donald Tusk. A draft copy of the EU's negotiation guidelines, which will provide a broad response to the British government's letter, will circulate among the remaining 27 member states on Thursday. Our correspondent, Joanna Hampson, reports on the process of the negotiations.
In just five paragraphs, Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty sets out how an EU member can voluntarily leave the European Union. It specifies that a leaver should notify the European Council of its intention, negotiate a deal on its withdrawal, and establish legal grounds for a future relationship with the EU. When speaking in the House of Commons earlier this month, Prime Minister Theresa May reiterated the fact that Parliament would get a say during the negotiations, especially on the Great Repeal Bill.
Parliament will have its say. This is going to be lengthy negotiations over the course of those 2 years and more. Parliament will have its say in a whole variety of ways, not least, of course, in relation to the Great Repeal Bill.
Theresa May has previously announced that her government will introduce this bill to end the supremacy of EU law in the UK. The bill itself is a fairly straightforward piece of legislation. However, it is expected to be subject to amendments and changes. Kate Devlin, the political correspondent for The Herald, explains that due to minority in the House of Commons, the debate on the Great Repeal Bill will be complex.
Theresa May has an extremely small Commons majority. She has a lot of very annoyed Conservative backbenchers sitting behind her, on some who are pro-EU, some who are more Eurosceptic. Then there are all the opposition parties as well, all of which will be attempting to amend and change the Great Repeal Bill as much as possible.
Immediately after Article 50 is triggered, Britain will be given a two-year window to negotiate a new relationship ahead of March 2019. Theresa May had already hinted at a prolonged timescale, but officials in Europe remain positive that a deal will be finalised before the expected exit date. Anna Colombo, Secretary-General of the Social and Democrats Group in the European Parliament, said that institutes in Brussels are not thinking about an extension and are ready to start negotiations.
I realise that it took a long time from the referendum until tomorrow to trigger Article 50, but I think that exactly because it took so long for everybody to be ready to start, I am confident for a number of reasons that the procedure will be finished in 2 years' time.
Currently, the biggest obstacle Britain faces is the £52 billion outstanding debt to the EU. According to Ben Southwood, the head of research at the Adam Smith Institute, the UK has always paid its debts for hundreds of years without default. However, he claims that the economic implications are unclear.
Uncertainty is always a cost, so firms like to plan their investment and what they do in the future and their hiring and all of their policies and strategies based on what they expect the political and business landscape to look like. The uncertainty about the length of negotiations and what the final form will look like is definitely a cost. The more important question is what they will actually end up looking like.
Kate Devlin highlights that 2 years is very little time to unwind 45 years of EU membership.
Changes in the UK's relationship with the EU, and indeed leaving the EU, going to happen gradually, that there's an awful lot to talk about and an awfully short period of time.
Today marks the introduction of the new, more secure £1 coin design. The old coins, which have been in circulation since 1983, will only be accepted until the 15th of October, so make sure to spend or bank your old coins by then. Linnea Lynn has the story.
£1, please. Thank you.
Today's the day. If you're attached to your round pound coins, you'll have to say goodbye because the new 12-sided state-of-the-art £1 coin has been introduced. The main reason behind the change is to combat the spread of counterfeits. According to the Royal Mint, 1 in 30 of the £1 coins in circulation is a counterfeit. The new coins boost a number of new features which are said to make it the most secure coin in the world. The Royal Mint's chief engraver, Gordon Summer, explained some of the new features this morning.
We've got a brass-coloured outer and a nickel-coloured inner. We've got microtext, so that's very fine lettering on the inside of the edge of the coin. We've got what we call a latent image. So this is an image, if you look at it one direction, you'll see one image, which is the one sign. And if you look at it in another direction, you'll see the pound sign.
The new coin is also almost three times lighter than the old one. Part of the final design was chosen from 6,000 entries in a competition. The winning designer was a 15-year-old boy named David Pierce from Walsall, whose design includes four plants, each associated with the four nations that make up the UK. Today marks the first change in the coin's shape since its introduction nearly 34 years ago. However, it has led some to question whether we will be using coins and physical currency 34 years from now. The use of contactless card payments and services like Apple and Android Pay continues to grow each year, meaning consumers are beginning to leave cash behind. Only 46% of transactions in 2017 so far have been paid in cash. It is still a little early to rule out cash entirely, though. Gordon Summer says that the outlook for coins isn't so bleak.
Well, it's actually a strange contradiction that although contactless technology is taking over in some respects, there are actually more cash transactions now with coins than there ever were before.
Police Scotland have launched an initiative this week that seeks to raise awareness and encourage reporting of hate crime. But how much of a problem is hate crime in Scotland? And what exactly are we talking about when we refer to hate crime? Our correspondent, Eileen Beaton, investigates.
What you're hearing right now is the moment a small group of white nationalist protesters arrived in Scotland's capital this weekend, raising their arms in a fascist salute directed tauntingly towards the much larger crowd of counter-protesters who turned out to disrupt their self-appointed White Pride Day. The scenes were frightful and shocking to many. Three of the white nationalists were arrested that day for religiously aggravated offences, giving the Nazi salute in Scotland can be considered a hate crime. The timing of the white nationalist demonstration was portentous. This week, Police Scotland have launched a nationwide campaign to raise awareness of hate crimes and to encourage more victims to come forward and report any incidents they've experienced. Although hate crime in Edinburgh is reportedly down by around 1% on this time last year, the police say they're very aware that much of what goes on does not get reported. Part of the problem, the police have said, is that many people don't know exactly what a hate crime is. Inspector David Haps from Police Scotland's Prevention, Intervention and Partnerships Department explains the National Hate Campaign to us.
A hate crime is a crime that's committed against either an individual or a group, which can be motivated by race, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity or disability. It could be verbal hate crime, it could be, you know, damage to property, or it could involve physical violence.
So it's clear that hate crime is a rather broadly defined issue, but one thing the police are very clear on is their zero-tolerance approach.
You know, I think everyone's got the right to live without fear of persecution because of who they are or who they're perceived to be. So, you know, certainly the message that Police Scotland are sending out is that hate crime's never acceptable and we certainly don't tolerate it.
Another issue, Police Scotland have told us, is that many people don't feel comfortable coming to the police directly. Because of this, they've trained a network of third-party reporting organisations who are much closer to minority communities, in the hope that victims of hate crime can feel confident in coming forward. There are dozens of third-party groups around the city.
My name is Yahya Barry. I'm the imam here at the Central Mosque.
Edinburgh Central Mosque is one third-party reporting organisation.
My approach is person-centric. Is that person okay? How can I help them out? And then think about, okay, would they be interested in reporting this crime? In my experience of the Muslim community, even non-Muslim community, that not everyone wants to go through what they see as the hassle and the bother of lodging a report. I think it's about, I don't know, breaking that mindset. I mean, people thinking that it's a waste of time or that it's not worth it or it's hassle.
National Hate Crime Week runs through till Sunday.
Throughout Edinburgh, people are organising events to raise awareness and funds for World Autism Week. In the UK, 700,000 people are on the autistic spectrum, which is more than 1 in 100. Together with their families, this means autism is part of a daily life for 2.8 million people. Reporter Ione Young finds out more.
I'm currently standing next to the Autism Awareness Stand at Napier University. People all over the capital are working to raise funds and increase awareness so that as many people as possible learn about autism. Autism is a lifelong disability which affects person's mental development and how they communicate with other people, leading them to experience the world around them differently. We spoke to Connor Ward, a 19-year-old boy from Nottingham, who explains how it is to have autism.
Push the clutch down and you're rolling with the clutch. So kind of you've lost complete control but everything's still running. It's really hard to explain. It feels like my brain's on fire, etc. Like I could name every single Jessie J concerts. What will happen is my mum will say something to me and I'll quote her on it like 4 years later and I'll say like, oh, but on the 27th of January at 2 o'clock you said this to me.
So what can be done to help? Children with autism receive support at school, but what assistance is available when faced with the challenges of university? Jenny Hall, Disability and Inclusion Advisor at Napier University, talks about services available specifically for students.
Well, there's a wide range of services available, particularly as a university, we use the services available through Number 6 Autism Initiatives. So they provide support to our students. They can meet with them a couple of times a week when they're not in class to help them plan and organise their time, stay on top of their studies.
Councillor Ricky Henderson, convener for Health, Social Care and Housing, highlights what is needed to make a real difference. He believes a basic awareness in society is a step in the right direction to helping people who suffer from autism.
Yeah, well, I think we all have a responsibility to at least have a basic understanding of conditions like autism. You know, it's not the kind of scary thing that perhaps some people think it is, and it comes in varying degrees. And sometimes people with autism maybe struggle with some sort of day-to-day situations, and I think anything we can do to raise awareness just so that people are as supportive and as kind and considerate as possible when people might be having difficulties, then the better for us all.
Throughout this week, multiple events will take place in Edinburgh, leading up to World Autism Awareness Day on the 2nd of April.
The Ross Bandstand has been the stage to some of Edinburgh's biggest festivals, from the Fringe to the annual Hogmanay celebrations. But now, Edinburgh's historic arena is getting a makeover. Emily Hewitt reports from the Princes Street Gardens.
I'm here at Edinburgh's Ross Bandstand in the heart of Princes Street Gardens. Artists, ranging from Paolo Nutini and the Pet Shop Boys, have taken centre stage at the bandstand over its 80 years as a venue. However, last year, Edinburgh City Council deemed the venue unfit for purpose, so a competition is now underway to design its remodelling. Professor in Festival and Event Management, Dr. Jane Ali Knight, welcomed the recent investments.
We could have larger concerts in the summer. We could attract different artists to the city, where we're competing with Glasgow all the time for that. So I think there'd be a lot of value, really, because it is there already, but it's really not fit for purpose, so there would be a good value in some sort of investment into it.
Apex Hotels founder Norman Springford has given his financial support by setting up the Ross Development Trust, who have funded a £25 million project. The Trust launched the architectural competition that has now been narrowed down from 125 entries to only 7. The Glasgow firm leading the restoration of the Glasgow School of Art's McIntosh building has been shortlisted, but the Scottish architect team face fierce competition, with other finalists coming from Europe, Japan and the USA. The winning design will go on display in August this year. Expressing his gratitude to the Trust, Councillor and Culture Convener for Edinburgh City Council, Richard Lewis, said,
because it is a difficult time for local authorities to be investing in cultural infrastructure, you know, at a time when the council is having to make big savings. So it's been a wonderful sort of sign of confidence in the city that the Trust, through Norman's leadership, has managed to put in. And, you know, we're very grateful for that.
Mr. Lewis added that they're planning to modernise the venue.
Bandstand, which has now not had any money or significant amounts of money spent on it since the 1930s. So it does need to be brought back into the latter part of the 20th century would be good, but we're planning to obviously fund something which will be a venue fit for the 21st century.
It is hoped that the newfound focus on Edinburgh's art scene will bring more attention and tourism to Scotland's vibrant capital city.
And now it's over to David Ronnie with the latest sports news.
Hibs host title rivals Greenock Morton tomorrow night at Easter Road. Hibs are coming off a 2-1 win against Falkirk, their first win at home in the league since the start of January, whereas Morton were beaten by 1-0 against Dunfermline Athletic, their first defeat at home in 5 months. Jim MacArthur, who played for both Hibs and Morton, believes Hibs have enough to stay on top for the rest of the season.
They would have to virtually lose every game now, because the games are running out, and the other teams would have to win every game. So, yeah, it is in Hibs' hands. The Championship, it's strange because obviously you had the stronger teams going up. Hearts went up, they were the strongest team for sure. Rangers went up, they were the strongest team. And then Hibs are the strongest team, they've got to make sure they do go up.
He then went on to state his expectations for next season.
Once it comes to the turn of the year, maybe they could start thinking about top six.
Scotland rugby captain Grade Laidlaw hopes to return to action within 4 weeks, just in time for the nation's tour of Australia in the summer. The scrum half is recovering from ankle ligament damage, which he sustained in a defeat by France in Paris. Andy Murray has been ruled out of Great Britain's Davis Cup quarter-final tie against France next month, as he recovers from an elbow injury. The British captain Leon Smith has said it is a big loss to the team to be without the world number one. The Republic of Ireland hosts Iceland in a friendly tonight, their first game since captain Seamus Coleman suffered a broken leg in Friday's goalless draw with Wales. Coleman's captaincy has been passed on to Robbie Brady, who spoke of the honour despite the circumstances.
It'll be a dream come true for me. I'll be looking forward to leading the lads out and hopefully putting on a good performance and a good home win, hopefully.
9 months following Iceland's shock 2-1 win over England in the Euros, the Nordic country has experienced a baby boom. Last weekend saw the highest ever amount of epidurals administered to patients in Icelandic hospitals. This comes a year after fertility rate was described as not sustainable for the long-term population levels. And that's your sports roundup.
And finally today, the UN last week unveiled Norway as the world's happiest country. But now it turns out that you don't have to move to freezing Norway in order to be happy. Morningside comes out on top of the latest Edinburgh People Survey as the capital's most cheerful place to live. The survey is run by the Edinburgh Council to monitor the attitudes of residents towards the quality of life in Edinburgh and satisfactions with neighbours, street cleaning, recycling, libraries, public transport and street lighting. What else would you need to be happy? Our correspondent Peter Hamill takes to the streets to find true happiness in Morningside.
I'm standing here in Morningside, and it feels, well, happy. According to the Edinburgh People Survey, 99% of people in Morningside said they were satisfied with Edinburgh as a place to live. Similarly, 98% of those same people thought the same about the residential area. With a population of over 33,000, Morningside feels akin to suburbia, as it's filled with excellent schools and easy transport into the city center. On top of that, the neighborhood is decorated with bakeries for eating, pubs or coffee shops for drinking, and parks for dog walking and letting their children play. Most people of Morningside seem to agree with the results of the survey. However, some don't quite see it as heaven on earth.
Let me home to Southwest Edinburgh. I am nearly bankrupt living in Morningside. The greedy bastards have taken all of my money. It's cost me £70 for a watch, £1,000 for a new wardrobe. It's time to go home.
I think it's quite a happy place because lots of coffee shops where you can relax and meet people. Because it's a place that people come to meet people. So I would say it's a happy place.
A lot of positivity, got some amazing customers, always big smiles on their faces. And with the wind, the rain, the sun, they seem to always sort of have that shining light.
Every place is happy. If you're happy, isn't it? I mean, really, it's what you make of it, the people that live there, not the name of the street. The people that are there, I think, that makes it happen. If they're happy, then everybody else is happy.
Melanie Main, councillor for Morningside, gives her thoughts on the survey and what Morningside is doing well.
Well, I think it does very well. As Morningside itself and the surrounding area is a very lovely part of the city to live in. It has a thriving high street, and wherever you go, there are people about, there's children about, our schools are busy. So because and a fantastic atmosphere there. So I think that it is a good place to live. It's wonderful. However, if you actually look at the responses, there are less than half people of the people surveyed agreed that road maintenance and waste and recycling, that these things were satisfactory. So I think particularly in the roads maintenance, pavements maintenance, there is a lot of there's a lot more work that we need to do. I think in street cleaning, a third of people responded who weren't happy. And then when you look at people's belief that they have a say in what is happening in the city, then again, that's below 50%.
Fortunately, the Edinburgh People Survey did not claim any specific area as the unhappiest in Edinburgh. But the actual content of the survey might come off as a little shallow. Rather than including questions about mental health, the survey measures happiness based on trivial issues such as street cleaning, street lighting, parks, recycling, and yes, really, the management of dog litter issues. Perhaps as long as you're not stepping into dog poo, life can be pretty darn happy.
Now the evening weather forecast. Temperatures are due to hold about 8 degrees tonight due to a good cloud cover and remain dry. Expect this to continue on until tomorrow morning, until some light rain tomorrow afternoon. The traffic today. Drivers can expect heavy traffic and delays on the Calder Road, St John's Road and Queensferry Road. Today's headlines again. MSPs are expected to vote in favour of India F2 going forward, but what's next? Theresa May is set to trigger Article 50 tomorrow. And that is the end of the show. Thank you to Brooke Mills and to all of today's reporters. Our next news show is tomorrow at 9 a.m. You are listening to Radio Energy. This is David Paul.